It's the Full 48. Howard Beck, senior NBA writer for Bleacher Report. Before I get to my guest, once again, a quick programming note. This podcast, the Full 48, is, I'm sorry to say, ending soon, at least on this feed. Last episode of the Full 48 will publish the day after the championship is decided, which might be sooner than we thought. We'll see. I'll be back with a new podcast, new platform, new name sometime later this year. And if you want to follow me there, please follow me on Twitter at Howard Beck, because that's probably where I will announce what's next. Have some other thoughts on how to get that out there. But follow me on Twitter at Howard Beck to make sure that you do not miss where the podcast is going. My guest today is a two-time All-Star, played 13 years in the NBA, including one season with a young LeBron James and one season with a older Kobe Bryant. He's also a recent graduate of Duke University, the degree in sociology, and he's doing some work right now with DraftKings. Carlos Boozer, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, man. Howard, thanks for having me on the show. First time on the Full 48. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. I want to give a quick shout-out to DraftKings real quick as I partner with them throughout these playoffs. A perfect time for guys. If you haven't downloaded the DraftKings app, download it now. The Lakers are in the finals, obviously going against the Miami Heat, and the Lakers have been one of the top tickets on DraftKings. They've been making a lot of money for them. Go download the DraftKings app now. Place your bets with a chance to win some money.
Now, is there a part of the app, Carlos, where they can get, like, your picks and your insight, or are they just on their own?
There is. There's a couple of them where I do my own picks. I post them on my Twitter account from time to time.
Nice.
So if you happen to catch it, follow my picks. I got inside information.
And if you steer them wrong, where do they send the letter of complaint?
Good luck finding that P.O. box.
appreciate you making some time. We're recording this on Thursday afternoon, the day after what ended up being a Grizzly game one, unfortunately. I mentioned real quick, I'll come back to it real quick before we get to the finals. Congrats on completing your degree at Duke.
Thank you.
I saw that story last month. That's phenomenal. How's it feel to have that? I know a lot of guys, they wanted, you know, that you leave school early to come to the NBA, but you've made a promise to parents or to yourself. And like, so tell me about just the feeling of kind of completing the degree and what's it mean to you now?
Yeah, actually, it means everything, man. I'm one of those guys that like to complete something I started, like finish what I start. And had the opportunity after my junior season to go pro, and I did. And then every year, including my rookie year, all the way to my 13th season, I tried to come back to school. It just gets a little bit tougher as you start a life, you get married, you have kids. My career also took off, so I was going to a couple of Olympic games in 2004 and 2008. It got harder and harder to get back to Durham, to campus. Especially living in Miami, it's hard to leave Miami in the summertime. But I was very fortunate. One of the blessings in disguise with this whole COVID situation was that Duke offered online education. So it gave me an opportunity to be remote, be in my home, and use Zoom calls to complete my degree. So I took three classes over the summer via Zoom and through our Sakai program at Duke, and was able to get my degree.
Nice. That's fantastic.
Thank you.
So I mentioned we are recording this the day after game one. I was one, Carlos. I don't know how you felt before the series started, because I did not download the DraftKings app with your insights on it. I've been remiss. But I thought this would be a long series. I said Lakers in seven, and I really did. I felt like this was not a coin flip. I think the Lakers are definitely the better team, but I have such immense respect for the Heat and what they've done this season and their grit and their tenacity, especially defensively. But now we've got both Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo are being listed as doubtful. That just came across the wires in the last hour or so. Bam with a neck, Goran Dragic with the foot, plantar fascia. Jimmy Butler, of course, is going to be the indestructible person that he is, but we saw that turned ankle. That didn't look great. So there's your top three players who are either doubtful or, in Jimmy's case, at least a little hobbled. You know, where do they go from here if those guys are limited at all? Game two tomorrow night, I don't, you know, there's not much time for them to get right. What do you think of Miami right now?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I want to say, you know, wow. Like, I'm extremely impressed by Miami even being in the finals. I feel like they're ahead of schedule, so to speak. Jimmy's a great all-star over there. I think Bam is a terrific all-star and a future of that team and the rising. But they really don't have, like, a superstar on their team. And on their way to the finals, you know, they beat the Greek Freak, who was, you know, mega superstar, you know, two-time MVP, defensive player of the year as well. They beat a very loaded Boston team, including a Tatum, who I think is a superstar in the making over there in Boston. So very impressive of them to be in the finals again with the group of guys that they had. They kind of resemble that 2004 grit of the Detroit Pistons, where everybody, you know, was an option offensively, and they play tough, hard-nosed defense together, and they do it as a group. But this Laker team, you know, with LeBron James playing MVP caliber basketball, Anthony Davis also playing MVP caliber basketball, and the role players are terrific. You know, they played great last night. I didn't expect it to be a blowout, to be honest. I know the score was a little closer than what we than how the game really went, but it was a dominant performance after the first quarter by the Lakers. And with those top three, as you said, being injured or out, I think Bam will probably play. He's very tough. I'm not sure about the Dragon and Dragic. I know Jimmy will be out there no matter what. You have to take his heart out to get him off the court. But what I would say initially, I would say Kendrick Nunn will probably start. You know, he had a very good game in his limited minutes last night. And he actually had a really great season, even though he kind of fell out the rotation for the playoffs with Miami. But I think Kendrick steps in and starts. Hero is very good. He'll be out there a lot more, I think, as well. I think he might even get the nod over Duncan to start, because he's a little more creative off the dribble and off the bounce, and he can still hit threes. If Bam doesn't play, expect to see Myles Leonard more. We haven't seen him virtually at all in the playoffs. But if Bam does play, I still think, you know, the Lakers' size is giving Miami Heat problems. And I think we all predicted that when the series started, that, you know, Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee, even LeBron and Kuzma are both 6'7", 6'8", 6'9". So when those guys get in the paint, they're having a harder time finishing over that length and that size. And obviously the rebound battle is being dominated after game one, being dominated by the Lakers. And that just gives their team more possessions, second chance points in that regard. And then not to mention their swarming defense, where they're out in transition, getting layups and fast break points. So the outlook for the Miami Heat on the series looks kind of, you know, glim, kind of grim, overcast, raining, thunderstorm. It doesn't look too good moving forward. But to be clear, I had picked the Lakers to win this series. I thought it would be, you know, 5-6 games if the shooters of the Miami Heat could get hot and put them over the hump in a couple of games. But with those three guys being banged up and potentially two of those guys not playing, I definitely see it, you know, another win for the Lakers in game two.
Let's give this hypothetical for a second, Carlos, or entertain this hypothetical. Let's say that Bam and Dragic both somehow gutted out, are able to play tomorrow night and play, you know, capably, decently. If the Heat are at close to full strength, what can they do tactically? Because, you know, if you put Bam on AD from the get-go, you know, Bam could be in foul trouble. It's a tough matchup for him. If you're moving to more of Myers Leonard or Kelly Olynyk or something, those guys just can't stay with AD. Like, where can Spoelstra go, assuming he has all the tools available to him? Is there anything schematically or just matchup-wise they can even do to try to slow down AD a little bit, to say nothing of LeBron? They at least have bodies to throw at LeBron. They've got Iguodala, they've got Jay Crowder, they've got Jimmy. But I feel like the AD piece is the really, like, that may be the unsolvable puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, to be quite frank about it, even the bodies that they're going to throw at LeBron, LeBron's at a very high level. He's playing, he's, you know, clicking on all cylinders, playing very well. The one thing I thought would do well would be the double team of AD and the zone. But they showed us in game one that they were knocking down shots. So if you're knocking down shots, the Lakers are hitting shots. Obviously, Caldwell Pope had a couple of big ones to get their offense momentum going in the first quarter. Danny Green chipped in. LeBron chipped in. AD had a couple. Kuzma had a couple. It was like, it was every, I think even Rondo hit a couple. It was like everybody started making shots. I thought the zone would do well against the Lakers to kind of slow them down. But two things happened in game one. One, they found the open man and they knocked down shots. That's why LeBron had 7 assists in the first half. Ended up, I think it was 1 assist shy of a triple-double. And then two, if they didn't knock the shot down, they were getting the offensive rebound. So again, it goes back to that size being a dominant factor for the Lakers. I feel like you can try to double, you know, try to save Bam's fouls and double team AD and make him, you know, find shooters. But then he did that in the first half and the second half, and the shooters were knocking shots down at a high clip. So it's kind of, you know, I don't know. I think the law of averages always works out where they're not going to shoot that efficiently every game. But once again, they're in a bubble. It's not like they're in a 25,000 seat arena with screaming fans. It's a smaller arena. It's a smaller gym. And the rims look a little bit bigger. Everybody's knocking down shots from everywhere. To be honest, you know, I think I would try the zone again, try to close out a little better, maybe do what you did, but maybe have better efficiency or maybe have better effort. Because to be quite frank, it doesn't look good.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. I was jotting down notes for this podcast, and I was trying to resist the hot takey question of, is this series already over? but I typed it down anyway because I felt like look, we all overreact. We do this all the time. 120 point loss by a team in the finals, and we immediately all think, how can this team ever come back? We saw this, I can't remember which year it was of Heat Spurs, but one of those years in the finals, it was like three straight games where one team was winning by 20 and it kept flipping which team was winning by 20. And so this happens. Like, teams get hot, you get in a rhythm, and it can flip just that quickly. So I don't want to write them off, Carlos, and I don't want to overreact. But the injury part of it feels a lot more ominous, to be frank. And like, that's the part I just don't know. For a team that has not been there before, and now you throw that on top of it, and you're going against LeBron and AD, who are both playing at MVP level, I'm trying to find the silver lining here for a longer series, and I'm having a hard time. And I guess the X factor is, can Jimmy, who you alluded to this, Jimmy has superstar talent. He doesn't put up superstar numbers, but I think that that's mostly by design. I wonder if there's a switch to be flipped there, where maybe Jimmy can go into more of that all NBA swingman mode that we know he has. We've seen it at times, including earlier in this postseason. Is that a way out of this?
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy definitely has another gear. Like, he had a really good game one as far as his efficiency. I think he had 23 points or 25 points. I can't remember what it was, but he was very efficient. He got to the free throw line. He created contact. His presence was felt out there, but the score, just the lead just kept growing and growing and growing for the Lakers. Jimmy can definitely get buckets, and obviously he has his nickname, and he can obviously, you know, encourage the rest of those guys, but he's going to need help. He can't do it by – you can't beat the Lakers by yourself. They got too much talent. They're driving very hard to get this championship for that organization with the passing of Kobe Bryant. I don't want to take any discredit away from – or discredit Spoelstra and Pat Riley and Mickey Arison and the whole organization. They've put together a phenomenal team of tough, gritty guys mixed with veterans and young guys. That play well together, and they've got themselves in the finals. Anything's possible, right? There's always a chance the team could come back, get hot. Maybe Hero goes off again from three like he did in the Eastern Conference Finals, has another 35, 37-point game. You never know what can happen. There's always a chance that someone could come in like Kendrick Nunn with something to prove and spark something for that team. You never know. But it just looks like LeBron and AD and the Lakers – will figure out a way to become victorious. Do I expect game two to be a better game? I do, if everybody plays.
Yeah.
The injury thing kind of alludes to, okay, if you don't have three of your best players, or at least two of the three best players, and the Lakers have their full, you know, roster of guys to throw at you, it doesn't look good because you're already at a mismatch if you're completely healthy. So you take away Dragic's 20 points a game, and you take away Bam affects the game way more than his numbers. I know he's averaging like 20 points and 12 rebounds and 5 assists, but his effort level, his energy, his screening, his enthusiasm, his presence, all of that is going to be missed if he's not out there for that team. He's been Mr. Everything for that team, and if he's not out there playing, I don't know where they can replace that at.
Yeah, no, he's such a unique quantity, and he's so key to so much of that they do at both ends. It's hard to see how they overcome that. Is there a psychological effect too? I know that, like, guys after a big loss will sometimes say, hey, look, doesn't matter if you lose by 2 points or by 32. It's, you know, a loss is a loss is a loss. But I got to feel like I believe that there is some psychological impact when you get blown out that badly. And again, the final score, as you pointed out, was not as bad as we know the game really was. Like, the game was out of hand. It was over, you know, basically going into the fourth. What's the worst loss you've been a part of? And is there a hangover? Does it haunt you into the next game?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I really don't know the worst loss. I mean, the great thing about the NBA is you learn humility very early. You know, the NBA at the pro level of probably every sport, it humbles you. You know, I went to Duke University, as you just said earlier in the show, and we did a lot of winning at Duke. And when I got to Cleveland, we did a lot of losing the first year. That's one of the reasons why we got LeBron the next year. But that being said, for me, my experience, I went to the playoffs a few times. I think it was like 9 or out of my 13 years or 10 out of my 13 years, I went to the playoffs. And one thing I will tell you is that you got to have a short-term memory in the postseason. Even if you're the Lakers and you win by 20 points, short-term memory, because if you don't have a short-term memory and you go into the game thinking that you have a 20-point lead, it's not how it works. It's 0-0. And usually the team that gets whooped on, like how the Miami Heat got beat up yesterday, they have a whole different level of a chip on their shoulder with something to prove, because you just embarrassed them on national TV, worldwide TV, in front of their mamas, in front of their wives, in front of their kids. And most NBA players are proud individuals because they work so hard to get to that level. And imagine the road they had to go through just to get to the finals. If they lose, I'll tell you one thing about Miami Heat teams. They're going to go out clawing, scratching, especially a team that has Jimmy Butler on it, because that's his MO. So I expect no matter who plays tomorrow, they may not win the game. Again, I just feel like the Lakers have more talent. They're well prepared. They got, you know, two of the best players on the planet, which is probably the best duo in the NBA this season in basketball, with AD and LeBron and LeBron and AD. Miami Heat may not be able to overpower them to get the win, but I guarantee they're going to give you the effort to try to.
It feels premature to start talking about LeBron and legacy, but, you know, it's never too soon. It's just a daily discussion in this league anyway. Assuming they can win 3 more games in this series, which is looking pretty good at the moment, I have said at times, Carlos, that I thought that if LeBron had retired, 3-4 years ago, whatever, after the first title with Cleveland, his third championship, I thought, given where he was statistically, the MVPs he had, the championships he had, the 8 straight finals, all that, I think his legacy is secure. And I didn't know that there was anything he could do to enhance or diminish it, no matter what he did in his remaining years. But the potential for this championship in a year in which, you know, the world lost Kobe Bryant and the Lakers specifically lost Kobe Bryant, and given where LeBron was a year ago after the worst injury of his career and uncertainty about where they would go next, I've kind of amended my view on this, that I think that this fourth title, assuming that he gets it in the next week or so, I do think it's going to be meaningful. What do you think about what there is for him to gain in terms of the bigger picture?
Yeah, I mean, LeBron's career has been, I can't even remember everything he's won, from four MVPs, 3 championships, 3 finals MVPs, countless all-star appearances. I don't even know how many all-star MVPs, which is like the best of the best. And he got the MVP of the game multiple times. Olympic gold medals, like, you know, we won one in Beijing in 2008. And he got a couple more after that. His basketball resume is impeccable. Just to put it into context, from 2010 to 2020, he went to 9 out of the 10 finals. Insane. And the only year he didn't go was last year when he was hurt and his team missed the entire playoffs, which is, that's just remarkable by itself. No matter if he won them, lost them, he went 9 out of 10 years. That's incredible. Almost an entire decade, which is, it just sounds like I'm lying to you.
There's nothing like it in the modern era. There's nothing like it until you go all the way back to the 60s Celtics.
Yeah, it's just to fathom that at this level against these kind of athletes is remarkable to me personally. So that being said, to me, his legacy can only grow, right? He's an elder statement being in his 17th season. He's leading a younger team in a prime time Anthony Davis, teaching these guys how to be champions, what it takes, the focus it takes, dedication it takes, the sacrifice it takes. They will be crowned champions, barring any crazy injuries to those two players. Just a matter of if it's 4 games, if Miami is able to squeeze one out by being hot, or got, you know, barring anything crazy happening, they will be named champions, and he'll have 4 NBA championships, and they'll come back next year and have a chance to do another one, depending what happens in free agency. You know, if Greek Freak stays in Milwaukee, if he leaves, who does Golden State go after? Who do they draft? there's a lot of things that can shift and maneuver over the off season. But what will remain is the Lakers will be the front runners again for the title. Like, I don't see LeBron declining a lot in year 18. Maybe a little bit less points, but the assists will be there. The energy will be there if he can stay healthy. Which, you know, I saw the article where he came out. I think he said he spends $1 million or $2 million a year maintaining his body, and that's incredible. Which is incredibly smart, is what I mean by that, because you know your body is your asset, and if you keep it in the best shape you could be in, you could play 18 years and have this kind of success that he's having. Maybe not the kind of success that LeBron is having, because LeBron's success is at a whole different level. Yeah. But that being said, I think his legacy is intact. To me, he's right behind MJ. For me, MJ is goated. LeBron is on that Mount Rushmore with him. I think there's a lot of other guys who Kareem and the Magics and the Birds and, the ton of Shaqs and the Kobes. And there's a lot of guys that have a lot of imprint, Tim Duncan's and Karl Malone's, that have a lot of imprint on this game, and the game has changed because of them. And LeBron is definitely towards the top of that list.
I've never gotten into the whole MJ versus LeBron GOAT discussion, just because I feel like it's unanswerable. It's not, different eras, yeah. different players, different rules, different styles of game. I mean, there's so much that's different, but it is fun to kind of, play with all these different factors of like, well, what tips the scales one way or the other? And I think a lot of it's generational. I'm a bit older than you, so my generation, and I think into your generation too, we're kind of captives of the MJ era. And so it's hard to accept that somebody might come along and potentially displace him. And there's a case to be made, and I could make the case in either direction. But somebody asked me this, and I'm curious what you think. All right, he wins this one. He's at four. And now all of a sudden it starts to feel like, well, maybe he could still get to six. Now, it won't be 6-0. It'll be six and, whatever the number of losses is, I think six, right? But who cares? Like, your finals record isn't the thing. It's how many championships you won. And plus, going to that many finals is in and of itself an incredible thing. Does it mean anything to you, Carlos? Do you think that getting to six championships, equaling Michael while also having everything else, would it change the discussion, or at least change it for you?
I think it does. I mean, obviously, Michael being in six finals and winning all six of them just sounds ridiculous as well. And, who knows if he doesn't retire, how many rings he would have ended up with, or how many finals appearances he would have had. Because, I mean, what LeBron has done could have been done before. It wasn't done, but it could have been done before with the Bulls. From 90 to 2000, the Bulls could have won all nine, all those championships if MJ never retired twice. We didn't get to see that, but what we did get to see is 2 three-peats, which showed how dominant they were. So, if LeBron does win six championships, I think that conversation changes dramatically. I think he has to at least get the five to change all of us old school guys who, seen Magic play and appreciate Tim Duncan, even though he wasn't as sexy as some of these other winners. He was a winner. And that's why they call him the big fundamental. Nobody wants to watch fundamentals. They want to watch all the flashy stuff. He wasn't very flashy, but he was pretty damn good. So in my opinion, I think he has to at least get the five to really alter and shift that dynamic of all of us thinking that Jordan was the best basketball player that ever existed. But as far as his regular – if you look at LeBron's regular season, that's just his numbers alone, he's already surpassed Michael as far as rebounds and points and assists and triple-doubles and – obviously finals appearances. It's just that 6-for-6 was so dominant against so many different caliber of teams. It's just very hard to say that now when he's been, he's only won three. He's on the brink of winning four. I think once he gets to five, that argument starts to shift a little bit.
Yeah.
And he'll have a chance. I mean,
oh, he will.
This team and Rob Pelinka is doing a hell of a job of continuing to construct a team that could, win for LeBron and win for him now in the immediate future. Going to get Morris during the season was a huge pickup for them. You see how much he contributes every year. I mean, every game. He was big last night as well. He also hit a couple threes. So I just feel like Rob will figure out a way to always keep the right talent around LeBron and AD to give them championship aspirations every season, which is the Lakers standard. I think you would agree with that. So, and obviously this championship would also tie the Celtics for most titles in NBA history. So you think they're not going to be fighting for another one in 2021?
Yeah.
To break that tie? Of course they will.
I know having covered the Lakers back in the day, like that means a lot for them to tie the Celtics. Now that said, are they cheating a little bit by claiming all the Minneapolis Lakers titles? Like at the one banner at Staples that just has the whole collection of Minneapolis Lakers titles. I don't know. Feels like that's almost like a different franchise. I think the Celtics might take issue with the count there.
I mean, I don't know why they do that. And I've always, I personally have always felt that was weird when you take, even if the team changes, like OKC to Seattle to OKC or the Jazz, or I always feel like it's weird to have the city titles go along with the team.
Yeah.
But that's just how they do it in the record book. So it counts.
Yeah. No, I've always said if I were commissioner for a day or all powerful for a day, that would be one of my rules. Team leaves a city, you leave behind everything. The record books, the name of the team, everything. Like, I like the fact that it's not the Sonics in Oklahoma. Like, it just, it doesn't.
Right.
But I think they still have their record books, which is still, you know, still weird.
It is a little weird, yeah.
So, we mentioned this earlier. You were there for LeBron's rookie season, teammates in 03-04 in Cleveland. Was there one aha moment? It's not like LeBron was any mystery, right? Like, he'd been covered since he was like 14, 15 years old or whatever. He'd been on national TV as a high school player. So, we knew there was something special. But you never know until a guy gets to the league. Was there an aha moment or a specific a play, a game, something where you thought, oh, man, like this kid, there's way more here than just hype. Like this kid could be an all-timer. Was there one snapshot that told you that?
I'm glad you brought this up because I did an interview my rookie year, which was the year LeBron was a senior in high school. We had just drafted LeBron. So it was like in that summertime area. Obviously, we were in the playoffs. We got done pretty early in April. And we had plenty of time to digest the offseason. So we had our draft, and we drafted LeBron, and they interviewed us. It was like me and Darius Miles and Ricky Davis and Smush Parker. And they were asking us about, you know, what LeBron can bring to our team. And my response, so I went down through a whole season of ups and downs, more downs than ups, and struggling and trying to figure out how this team can win games. And I also got a chance to witness one of my brothers and Darius Miles, who was on at that time was a rising star. He was a young star, but he was on his way to becoming a star. And so LeBron and D. Miles kind of played the same position as like a point forward, three man. And so they asked me about him, and I'm just like, you know, I kind of defended my teammate. I'm like, yo, we got really good players or better players than him right now, thinking of D. Miles. And I was wrong. No disrespect to my boy D. Miles, and I think Darius would attest to this as well. When LeBron stepped on our practice court for the first time as an 18-year-old rookie, there was no question that he was the best player on the court. And so that interview gets kind of taken out of context because it was right before we got a chance to actually see him amongst all of us pros. And there was no – I mean, LeBron's passing ability, his athleticism, his maturity at 18 years old. I mean, we thought he was like Dominican and that he had two different passports. Like, two different birth certificates. We're like, there's no way this guy's 18. Like, there was one play we had a guard named Milt Palacio. He jumped over Milt in practice, like leaped over him. I don't know if you remember this, but when I was with the Bulls and he was with Miami Heat, we were playing in the I think it was the playoffs, and he leaped over John Lucas for an alley-oop. I don't know if you've seen that play.
Was that the conference finals?
It might have been the conference finals, and he did the same thing his rookie year over Milt Palacio. He jumped over Milt Palacio for a dunk. And I'm like, I've never seen that before.
Milt Palacio, like I'm looking up real quick. He's 6'3". So this is not like he jumped over Muggsy Bogues.
No. Yeah, exactly. So I'm just saying, once we got LeBron in practice, we knew right away that he was the best player on our team. And nobody knows that an 18-year-old kid is going to take over the league and have the career that he had and be as successful as he was and be one of the GOATs in the game and accomplish all that he accomplished. But LeBron was that guy. LeBron was able to come to the NBA, take it by storm, and he's still doing great things. And then what he's done off the court is even more remarkable and more impressive to me than anything else. Like doing the I Promise School and helping all the youth have an opportunity to go to college and get a good education and better their lives for themselves and their families. Just, I can't even put into words what that means to us in our neighborhoods that we come from. It's very impressive. He's been a great ambassador for the NBA, and I hope he plays as long as he can, because once he's gone, he'll be sorely missed.
He absolutely will be. And also shout out to his efforts right now with More Than a Vote, trying to get people registered and trying to fight against voter suppression and get folks registered, period. No, it's amazing. I don't know. I mean, I've covered the league for 23 years, and so the tail end of the Jordan era, and then all through you know, Kobe, Shaq, LeBron. Like, I don't think anybody's made as big of an impression on this league on and off the court combined. At least not in my time. You can make a case for Kareem and some others, obviously, in the past. But what LeBron has done, as you point out, is phenomenal. I would just say, Carlos, in your defense and your old teammates' defense from Cleveland back then, like, of course you're going to always take up for, you know, the guys who are already on your team, right?
Yeah.
And you know, it's understandable. Plus, kids come in with a lot of hype, you know, every year, and not everybody can measure up to it. So I think there was probably a natural suspicion of, like, well, is he really going to be all that? And, you know, people had seen some, but not all. Like, it's not like you had seen – it's just different. It's different when you get to the league, and you can't know until the guy's actually there. Was there one game that rookie year that stands out to you, the one that left the indelible impression?
I mean, the very first game. I mean, we played Sacramento,
right? Yeah.
At Sacramento against – I think they were the Western Conference – regular season champs, and obviously the Lakers had beat them in the playoffs. But
yeah.
That team with Chris Webber and Mike Bibby and Peja Stojakovic and that entire crew with Vlade Divac, they were incredible, right? And so we come in there. I think it was called Arco Arena, and I think it's changed now, but at the time it was called Arco Arena,
yeah.
And it was packed. And you have to look up his numbers. You may know better than me off the top of your head, but he had like 25 points and like 8 or 9 rebounds, like 8 or 9 assists. And there was more cameras. And again, I went to Duke University, and we got a lot of cameras at our school. I saw more cameras at that game than I ever saw any game in my life, ever. They were like on. We had to get the security to back them off the court while we were warming up because they were coming on the court. There was like it seemed like 1,000 cameras on our side of the basket just to watch them to warm up. And he did not disappoint. The thing I want to tell everybody, all your listeners, about LeBron James, he has been the most hyped athlete ever. I mean, the only guys I can think of is like a Muhammad Ali, you know, Mike Tyson. Like, he's, you know, obviously MJ, you know, was really before the, you know, he was hyped up as well, but it was really before the internet boom at social media. And because social media is as big as it is, LeBron may be the most hyped, talked about athlete of all time. And he never has disappointed any of us that are fans, any of us that are his teammates, or his brothers, his viewers, just basketball fans around the world. LeBron has never disappointed us. And that's just impressive to me, from his rookie year when he won Rookie of the Year to his MVP years to his championship years, even as a competitor going against him, you know, being able to see what he did, like to be able to shut down players and figure out the way, like one of the best adjusters of all time. LeBron has never disappointed. I know a lot of people want to say, oh, you know, the Dallas championship that they lost when it was the Miami Heat, they should have won that champion. Well, no, Dallas deserved it because they outplayed them. They beat them. They lost to a champion. You can't take away what somebody else did against you. But to be quite frank, LeBron has surpassed everything that was expected of him, and just the ultimate superstar.
And never been in a bit of trouble or even a hint of trouble off the court besides.
Yeah,
I mean, he's been model citizen throughout. That first game, I pulled it up, 25 points. This is his rookie debut against the Sacramento Kings, October 29th, 2003. 25 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds, 4 steals, shot 12 of 20, played almost 43 minutes.
As an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
Think about that. He's playing against the Western Conference regular season champs.
Incredible.
Tell me that's not incredible. That was, to me, like, one thing about killing in practice, one thing about killing in the preseason games where everybody's playing at half speed. But when you do it against a Western Conference opponent who won the regular season Western Conference crown, who lost in the conference finals to the Lakers, that's when I was like, this kid's the real deal. Like, he's the real deal.
So 7 years later, LeBron leaves Cleveland in part because he couldn't break through. He goes to Miami so he could play with another couple of All-Stars and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. But he had a potential perennial All-Star power forward with him when he got there, but you left.
Yeah.
How different is history, Carlos, if you had stayed with LeBron? And have you – how often over the years – I'm sure you get asked all the time. How often over the years do you think about that kind of sliding doors moment of deciding to leave for Utah right out, you know, a year after he got there?
Yeah, I mean, we had talked about that. We talked about it a couple of times. We probably would have won a couple of championships in Cleveland and broke that door down a lot earlier. You know, we had a pretty good team with Big Z and D Miles. And I mean, obviously, we ended up trading Ricky Davis, but Ricky was really good. He was a scorer. He's an asset. We had DeJuan Wagner, who had a couple of health issues, but he was a stud. And the way that LeBron had evolved into the player that he became and the all-star that I evolved into becoming, we probably would have came out the East a few more times. You think about the time he took a team that had no all-stars on it except for himself to the finals against the Spurs. Imagine if he had a little bit more talent around him. Not saying they would have beat the Spurs, but the Spurs are a dynasty, of course, in their own right with Popovich and Duncan and the rest of that crew. But yeah, we've talked about that multiple times. It was an opportunity I couldn't turn down. They were offering me almost double the money. And I tried to stay. Like, I tried to tell the Cleveland ownership and management, like, listen, I want to stay. If you guys even come close to the number, like, I'm getting offered $72 million, $75 million to come to Utah. If you come up to 60, I'll cut off the 15 and just stay. But they wouldn't. They had to trade two players, and they didn't want to trade those two players. And so I ended up going to Utah. And I got to – don't get me wrong. I love my time in Utah to play for Jerry Sloan and play with Darren Williams and Andre Karolinko and Paul Millsap and learn from Karl Malone and John Stockton and that whole family. So I got no regrets on my decisions that I made for my career. But, man, if they would just came up a little bit, we could have got some rings in Cleveland earlier.
It's a tough thing, Carlos. I mean, like, we sit here, we in the pundit class and, you know, fans and media both – and it's easy to make these judgments like, well, you should have stayed because you're playing with this generational type player, everything else. But like the trade-off that players have to sometimes make in a salary capped league and a luxury tax league where sometimes, you know, you have to choose money over winning or winning over money. And like easy for us who are not the ones turning down tens of millions of dollars to say, oh, you should have stayed because you could have done that. I mean, like that's a tough trade-off, and you made a good decision for yourself and your family and a decision that paid off for you in any number of other ways, and you just listed a bunch of them too, like getting to study under Karl Malone and Jerry Sloan. Like, you know, it is a trade-off, but it's
and Howard, you know what's interesting? When I was making the decision, I could have chose, there was four teams that offered me the same amount of money. It was the Atlanta Hawks, who were going through like a reprogram. It was the Charlotte Bobcats, who were like a new expansion team at the time. The Denver Nuggets, who had Carmelo Anthony, who a lot of people thought should have won Rookie of the Year because his team actually went to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And we missed the playoffs by like a game or two that year. And then the Utah Jazz. And so I chose the Utah Jazz because they had a team in place that could be a playoff team and compete. You know, Karolinko was an all-star. Jerry Sloan was a Hall of Famer and coached two Hall of Famers and Stockton and Malone. They got Mehmet Okur to come over from Detroit, who was a knockdown three-point shooter from the center position. They had a roster that I fit perfectly. And we went to the playoffs 5 out of 6 years that I was there. So it was – I thought I was going to a team that had a chance to win a championship, and the financial benefit was tremendous. So
yeah.
I wasn't leaving a good team to go to a bad team and make more money. I was leaving a good team to go to another good team and get a raise.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yes. It wasn't, I didn't mean to imply it was any kind of downgrade either, but it is, you know, all these decisions involve trade-offs. And we see it, of course, a lot now. I mean, guys are constantly making these kind of decisions because the league is just so fluid right now.
Absolutely.
In terms of players going where they're going. You mentioned Rob Pelinka earlier. He was your agent, of course, for much or all of your career?
My whole career.
Whole career. You know, obviously he's done a great job in getting this team back to the finals. It's been pretty quick too. Did you have a sense that Rob had these kind of aspirations when you guys were working together?
No, I mean, the story that he told me, like, obviously, you know, him representing Kobe's entire career, he had great relationship with the Buss family and he knows that Laker organization intimately, you know, obviously with Kobe making a lot of decisions for that team and them coming to him about players to draft or players to trade for or what have you. Rob had he's like Laker royal, like Laker family, like, you know, legacy because of Kobe Bryant. So when they came to him, when they had Mitch Kupchak for a very long time and they came to him with the opportunity of becoming the GM, you know, it took a minute for Rob to think about because, you know, it's a whole different thing for him and his family. You know, he owns his own sports agency and he's making, you know, pretty good money. But the opportunity that they would give him to be the GM of the Lakers, a team that he basically, you know, grew up loving with Magic Johnson, and also, you know, being able to watch the maturation, the growth of Kobe Bryant, and take that team to more championships and be part of that whole family was something that he couldn't pass up. Like, he admired the organization so much. He has a really a great admiration for the Buss family and that organization. So for him, you know, and to be honest, I'm not surprised that he's been able to do this. Number one, it's the Lakers. Number two, Rob has that kind of a mind where he's able to put pieces to a puzzle together and figure out what works. So, you know, getting LeBron James was incredible. You know, him trading for Anthony Davis was incredible. Him putting the pieces around that would work, like getting Danny Green as a knockdown shooter, bringing in Rondo, who has that veteran presence and that championship pedigree, bringing in a tough guy like Morris, you know, them drafting Kuzma, you know, bringing in Caruso. Like, no one could look at Caruso and think, oh, he's going to be a difference maker. But you watch Caruso play, he's a difference maker. He's a lockdown defender, freak athlete that can shoot threes. Like, what I'm saying is Rob has a great eye for talent, and it's shown in everything he's done, from being, you know, part of that Fab Five group at Michigan, to being a sports agent, to being one of the most successful sports agents, to being a successful GM. So I'm not surprised that he has his team, you know, bidding for championships every year. It doesn't hurt to have LeBron James.
It does not.
He put other pieces around him that will ensure that the Lakers will always have a chance to win titles.
And we got to stop treating Alex Caruso or talking about Alex Caruso like he's some kind of like mascot or, you know.
He can play.
He can play. I mean, I know.
I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
Yeah. Oh, no, he busts his butt every second that he's out there. He makes big plays. He makes big defensive stops. He's been fun. I know everybody likes to have fun with that because he looks the way he looks, but he's more than a mascot at this point.
Good play, yeah.
A couple more things I want to hit before I let you go. You spent some quality time in Chicago with Tom Thibodeau. Obviously, I'm based here in New York, so the Knicks are always of interest. They just had their mini camp, their first exposure to Tom. I mean, it's you know, years later here now. You know, he's had the experience in Minnesota. He spent some time out of the league. Everybody, every coach in this league, every good coach evolves. What do you think the Knicks are getting in Tibbs at this stage? Or what was in your time with him, what do you think stood out the most that might be relevant for the team he's inheriting right now?
Listen, Tibbs is the most prepared coach. Him and Coach K are very close to me, like very close as far as like neck and neck and ranking, like who's the most prepared coach that I've played for. Tibbs will get there at 7 in the morning and be there till 7 at night every day of the year. I remember coming in town to Chicago over the summertime to see my girlfriend who lived in Chicago. And I went over to the gym to get some shots up, and he was there. And it was like 7 in the morning, 8 in the morning. He was already there. He already been there for an hour. You know, so I go up and say hi to him, check in with him, and he's like, dang, you're in great shape. I'm looking forward to the year. And on the board, what he did was he studied the last 25 champions and what they all had in common, from, you know, rebounding differential to shooting percentage to opponent shooting percentage to assists per game. He broke down every statistical category that was similar for each champion over the last 25 years. That's how detailed Tibbs is. And I never heard of that. Like, he wanted to study and find out what numbers create a champion in the NBA, because he wanted our team to be a champion. And we were close. And obviously, if we have D. Rose healthy, our chances would have went way up. You know, the one year we had him healthy, we went to the conference finals, and then he was hurt, you know, 6 years in a row. So, you know, it's very tough to win, you know, beat LeBron James when you don't have your best player. But we tried. You know, guys stepped in, like Nate Robinson played great. DJ Augustine played great. CJ Watson played great. But, you know, they're not Derrick Rose. But they're very good. So, what the Knicks are getting with Tibbs, you're getting a very prepared coach who will have you prepare for every game. The thing that Knicks fans that I would warn you is you got to have talent at a high level to be successful in the NBA. If you want to make the playoffs, you have to have playoff caliber talent. So they're going to have to. I like what they're doing with the management. They brought in some great guys. You know, I think Wes is going to do a phenomenal job. Worldwide Wes will do a great job helping out that front office. And Leon Rose would do a good job. He's also been a very good agent for many players in the NBA for a very long time. And then bringing in Coach Tibbs would be a great thing for that future. You got some veteran guys like Taj Gibson, who obviously played with us in Chicago and knows Tibbs very well, will help some of those young guys like R.J. Barrett and so on, Kevin Knox, get used to what Tibbs does. But you got to surround that young talent with guys that can really get the job done. You know, if they're able to go out and get a couple of free agents over the summer, over the offseason, that would be great. If they can draft guys that are immediately ready to participate and play, that would help. Tibbs will do a great job of developing the young talent. But if you want Tibbs to lead you to a championship or lead you to the playoffs, at very least, you got to surround that team with talent.
And that's my concern for them, Carlos, is that they, I think, by hiring a guy like Tibbs with his reputation and his just he's a marquee name, they've raised the expectation level. And I think it's too soon to be raising expectations for that team. It's not to say that he's the wrong choice. It's just that, to your point, and I think this is what you're alluding to, they just don't have the horses right now. They don't have the talent. They have a lot of work to do on that roster before Tibbs can have the kind of effect you want him to have. Like, even the greatest coaches in the world can't take, you know, whatever they were, a 20-win team and turn them into a playoff team overnight. It's not just about scheme or how hard you work. It's like, no, you need a certain amount of minimum level of talent in this league. And the Knicks are pretty far from that right now, I think. There's a lot of work that Leon and Tibbs have to do.
Agree. But they, I mean, listen, the great thing is it's New York, right? So I know they've missed out on some free agents over the years. You know, they also got some. You know, Amari came there when nobody really was looking at the Knicks. Carmelo basically bullied his way out of Denver to get to the Knicks. Yes. And Jason Kidd came, and you guys had a great run with Tyson Chandler in that group. I mean, obviously you guys didn't win a championship, but they made a great run with that group of guys. So it can be done, and it will be done again. And I just feel like it's always – we were talking about Stephon Marbury earlier, who's like a big bro to me. The league is better when the Knicks are good. That's how I feel. I feel like the league is better when the Knicks have a playoff team.
I think they're probably on the right track. I'm saying probably only because I feel like I want to see what they can do in free agency or maybe in the trade market. I just – there's a ways to go there. But I like the leadership right now. If you've got a few more minutes, I had one thing I wanted to throw at you. Oh, I had a Kobe question I wanted to ask. But before I got to that, if you've got enough time for it, when I was doing the research for this call, Carlos, I came across – it must have been the last broadcast you did before the shutdown back in March. And you told this phenomenal story involving Prince. And I thought, I can't not ask. So if you've got a few minutes to tell me about Prince, and then we can go out on a note about Kobe. So if you've got the time, I know you also got your kids' baseball practice there. So,
yeah, no problem. Yeah, he's on the field right now. So speaking of when I went to Utah, they gave me a great contract, and I wanted to live in L.A., and I bought this home. Bought it from the owner of Interscope Records. It was in Bel Air. And it was huge. It was like 18,000 square feet. It had like 10 bedrooms, two or three living rooms. It was remarkable. And I'd never seen a house that big before. So got that home. I stayed in it for about a month. I decorated the home. Then I went to Utah for my season. So soon as I get to camp, my realtor in L.A., her name's Roxanne Nelson. Shout out to Roxanne. She's blowing me up about someone wants to rent my house out. I'm like, rent my house? I didn't even live in the house. I've been there for like 1 month. I'm not renting my house out. And then she goes, listen, they're willing to pay you $95,000 a month for the year. And I was like, excuse me? Oh, yeah, we can rent it out. Yeah, no problem. You know, no problem. So I backtracked. And I was like, for $95,000, hell, they can rent it out. So flew to L.A. to sign the documents. And a limo pulls up, and no other than Prince steps out the limo. And I'm like, yo, is that Prince? And she's like, yeah, that's Prince. So Prince loved my house. He had been in it many times with the previous owner, of course, with different shindigs and parties that went on there. And so he was very familiar with the home, and he heard it was on the market. But by the time he heard it was on the market, I'd already bought the home. So he wanted to rent it out for a year to get inspiration for his album. It was called 3121. And obviously we signed the agreement. We got a chance to hoop a little bit, play some ball. He had a really good shot, actually. And fast forward the story, during the course of that season that year, I had tore my hamstring. And so I go down to L.A. to get physical therapy, PT, from a phenomenal physical therapist named Judy Cito, who now works for the Lakers.
Right.
So I stop by the house. I'm like, hey, Prince, I'm going to stop by the house. If you need anything, let me know. I pull up to the house, and the gate, I had two big lions on the gate. It's a big gold gate, had two big lions on. I pulled up to the gate, and it was a symbol. And I didn't know what the symbol was. I had never seen it before. I wasn't familiar with it. And so I thought I came to the wrong house. So I tried back down the street, come back up, and I put the code in. The code works. So I'm like, okay, so the lions are gone. Go up the gate. He had purple everywhere. As soon as you walk in the house, there's a black rug. He took out, I decorated this 18,000 square foot home with like this Italian rug and all this stuff. He took all the rugs out, put black rugs in. He had purple beds, purple couches. It was black and purple all over this house. One room looked like a massage parlor. One room was like a hairstylist room. He changed my weight room into a disco ball, like a nightclub. It had a DJ booth and everything, which I thought was actually kind of cool. I never saw that before. But I'm like, I'm living a little bit. Like, I'm about to sue Prince. But I'm like, I'm trying to get a hold of this guy. I'm like, yo, where are you? Where are you? He's not calling me back. So long story short, I get a hold of him maybe like a month later. And he's like, Los, I'm sorry, man. I'm on tour in Asia right now for my album. Don't worry about the crib, man. I'll change everything back. Don't worry. So let me just break it down for you. Prince rented out let me just tell you how much money he had. He rented out an 18,000 square foot home that I owned in LA, took everything out the home down to the forks and put it in storage for a year, redecorated the entire house customized for him, then wired me 500 grand when I finally got a hold of him just to ease my mind that he would make everything the same when he moved out. When he moved out, he took all of his stuff out the house in the storage and put all my stuff back in the house like he was never there. That's how much money Prince had while he was paying 95 grand a month.
Incredible. So that's like $1 million to rent your house for a year. Then he cut you a $500,000. So we're up to, I just did the math, $1.64 million plus whatever the storage costs were, which I'm guessing wasn't light. Like, you probably had a lot of stuff.
18,000 square feet worth of stuff. Yeah. Crazy.
That's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. Were you a Prince fan? And what was it like just kind of having that association with him, even for a short period of time?
Purple Rain and When Doves Cry. Like, I've heard all these songs my whole life because my parents were big fans. And so it was great, man. I mean, honestly, you know, may he rest in peace. He was awesome. Great conversationalist. He's from Minnesota. Was a huge, like, when he came to sign the papers, he was a huge Kevin Garnett fan. And we talked about KG and how he thought KG was going to, you know, just turn the Timberwolves into a complete powerhouse, which he did. You know, they didn't win any rings, but, you know, KG was pretty phenomenal in Minnesota. And, I saw him a couple years later at the All-Star game in New York. MJ has I'm sure you already know, MJ has a Jordan party every year during the NBA All-Star weekend. And Prince had performed at the All-Star party. And it was just cool to see him. He looked healthy as a bird. And then sadly enough, you know, a few months later, he passed away. But Prince was awesome, man. May he rest in peace. He was really, really like a godsend and a transitional icon for our people.
He was amazing. I saw him on the Purple Rain tour. That was one of my first concerts.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. That's awesome. In Oakland. Did you get any keepsake out of all of this, out of these transactions? Did you have some piece of Prince paraphernalia or autographed something or anything to remember him by?
No, just the memories of conversations, man. I saw him at a restaurant one time and we chatted for like an hour. Again, the last time I saw him was at the Jordan party in New York, just months before he had passed. And
yeah.
You know, just tons of those few memories I got with him.
That's amazing. Thank you for repeating that story. It's fantastic. Then one more. I hate to leave on somewhat of a down note. I didn't actually think about the fact that Prince and Kobe, of course, two icons we've lost. But your final season was with Kobe, 2014-15. So his second to last year. What's your lasting memory of Kobe down the stretch there? Obviously, not a great year for, you know, basketball wise for the Lakers or for you. You know, a ton of losses that year. I think you guys won maybe 17 games or 21 games that year. Maybe it was 17 the next. What's the Kobe memory out of that?
Kobe was great, man. I mean, training camp, obviously people don't remember, but that was also Steve Nash's last year. Like, they had put this team together with Steve and Kobe in the backcourt and me and Jordan Hill in the front court, and we had drafted Julius Randle, and you know, we had a team that probably would have been a playoff team that year, but Steve Nash in training camp threw out his back, decided to retire. Kobe got hurt maybe like 35 games in that season, so his season was shut down. And then we were just, you know, me and the young guys out there with Clarkson and Randall and a lot of the young guys. So we failed a lot that year, but it was a lot of lessons being learned. And one thing that Kobe did for the young guys early on during that season, came to every practice. He ran every sprint, and a lot of sprints he won. Even though he was an older gentleman going against some of these 19, 20-year-olds, he was winning the suicides and winning the sprints.
Wow.
Yeah, I think you guys all remember the clip where him and Swaggy P, we were playing scrimmaging during practice, and him and Swaggy P were going at it. He always taught those pearls of being competitive and challenging yourself and challenging your teammates to continue to be better. Don't be satisfied. This guy has 5 championships, countless MVPs. I mean, countless all-star appearances, gold medals. The list goes on for Kobe Bryant as one of the GOATs of our game. And he's out there winning sprints against the 19, 20-year-old kids in the year like 16, 17 for him. Like, so he always had that competitive fire from day one. And I remember in 2008, I tell this story all the time. In 2008, when we were going to China to try to, you know, be gold medalists and champions, we spent like a week or two in Vegas preparing for our Asia tour before we got over to Beijing. And every day, Kobe was getting up at 6 in the morning, going to get a lift in. He'd go have breakfast, then he would go shoot, then we would go have practice, and he would come back at night and shoot again. And by the end of that 2 weeks, you had the entire team doing the same routine. We all get up at 6 in the morning, go lift, go get breakfast, come back and shoot, go to practice, and come back at night and shoot again. And Kobe started that. And the next thing you know, ended up being gold medalist that year. And I think also Kobe went on to win the championship that year as well. So it's his work ethic. All the stories that you hear about his work ethic are real. You saw what he was doing after he retired from the NBA and trying to help out and pay it forward and pass it on to the next generation, whether it was women's basketball, young youth, stars in our game today, like, you know, Jason Tatum and Greek Freak and all these different guys would seek Kobe out to be better basketball players. And he was giving it back. So may Kobe rest in peace, man. We miss him. You know, the game misses him. The world misses him. Obviously, you know, we're praying for his family, Vanessa and the girls. And we know he's watching over Gigi up there. But Kobe was really starting to live his life once he retired. But his basketball life will forever be remembered.
Yeah. Well said. Well said, Carlos. Appreciate that. Hey, man, I have kept you long. I appreciate all of it. If folks want to keep up with your DraftKings, your insights on the NBA during the finals here, again, you can download the DraftKings app. You can follow DraftKings, and you can follow Carlos on Twitter at Mr. C. Booze and get all his insights. Carlos, this has been fantastic, man. Thanks for spending the time.
Anytime, man. Howard, I really appreciate it, man. Good luck to you in your endeavors. And again, thanks for having me on the show, man. I'm down to come back anytime. This is great.
No, would love to. And maybe when you're bouncing between pads, we'll bump into each other here in Brooklyn one of these days.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, man.